everyone, this is Bob Main. You are listening to another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. Our goal here is to make survival simple, not extreme. No conspiracy theories here, not a lot of tinfoil hat type stuff, just good common sense, how to live a better life, and that's what we're all about. And Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have wherever you are. And if you're a first-time listener, thanks for tuning in. You're listening to a voice of reason in a chaotic world, and I hope that you gain some valuable insights from this on how to make things better now so that if a disaster does happen, you can respond from a position to strength, And even if a disaster doesn't happen, folks, what you do today now makes your life better, and that's what our goal is. This is episode number 47. It's Tuesday, the 8th of December. However, you're probably not going to hear this because I'm not going to post it until about the 9th of December, Wednesday, maybe even Thursday. And I'll tell you why, folks. Let me tell you why it might be a while before you listen to this. If you listened to episode number 46, I told you I was recording that on the way to the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport to fly up to Green Bay, Wisconsin, to go to the Monday Night Football game, which I did. I attended the game, Packers versus Ravens. Packers won 27-14. My hometown team, it was a sloppy win, but they pulled it off. Well, now guess what? Now blizzard-like conditions have hit Wisconsin. As a matter of fact, they canceled my flight today to get home. They're saying there's going to be a whiteout here. This brings back old memories. I grew up in this stuff, folks. I spent my life fighting these types of winters, and I came back up here to have a little bit of fun, go to a game, take a brief vacation, and sure enough, can't get back home. It's going to be a chore getting home tomorrow. O'Hare is pretty much practically shut down right now. We're supposed to have 10 to 14 inches of snow. So what do I have to do? Nothing but sit here, getting a lot of work done, and getting a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls, and then talking to you and doing episode number 47. So wish me luck. I hope that I'm either on my way home by the time I post this, or I'm already home. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about increasing your chances of rescue. And I have not done a podcast on this subject yet, so I decided to go ahead and take a stab at it here. We're going to talk about things like wilderness and outdoor survival and what happens if an unexpected tragic event hits you. Let's say you're on a hunting trip or you're on a hiking trip or something like that. I'm going to analyze some factors that come into play and some things you might want to think about to do ahead of time, or if you find yourself, God forbid, in that situation, things that you can do, or hopefully you'll remember this show, and things that will help increase your chances of survival. So that's pretty much the main thrust of today's show. Before I get into that, I do want to make a couple of key announcements. The first announcement is, of course, as always, I always talk about our forum. Really growing nicely, and the number of topics and the wealth of knowledge being posted on there is incredible. If you have not become a member of our forum yet, go to todayssurvival.com/forum and check that out. You know, my mentor, Tom Hopkins, taught me that average minds talk about people and great minds talk about ideas and concepts. The small-minded people are the material-focused people. They're talking about the things that they own. The great minds are on our forum, folks. They're talking about ideas and concepts, and there's a lot of good information on there, so check that out. Also, the other announcement, our SAC contest is really heating up. To those of you who have been active in writing your elected officials and trying to make a difference, way to go. Like what I see, and looking forward to giving away that iPod and that little multi-tool type device that Knives and Gear, one of our sponsors, has put into that as well. So December 20th, still got a few weeks left. And the very last announcement, let me give a shout out to our sponsor, KnivesandGear.com. Checked out his website again the other day. Looks like he's been expanding it a lot. So Jeff, thank you for your support of our show, and give him some support at knivesandgear.com. All right, got the announcements out of the way. We're going to do about a 30-minute show, folks. This is 30 minutes of podcasting freedom here. I'm trying to keep this down, be respectful of your time, bring you the greatest value for your time, because I know that once your time is gone, you can't get it back. So let's dive into increasing your chances of rescue. Let me start by saying that the term survival is used to express what I think are the actions and the attitudes that help an individual continue to live in spite of the adverse circumstances that they find themselves in. And again, this show is geared towards, you know, wilderness, outdoor survival in case there's some kind of a tragic event. And the whole term survival is, what are you going to do when something hits to improve the situation that you're in and increase the possibility of your eventual rescue? And even if it's not an outdoor event, even if you're not in the wilderness, it's like anything else, right? When I say rescue, well, if you're in a financial crisis, you know, increasing the possibility of you being rescued from that financial crisis, all the preparations that you do early on to stay out of debt and save money and alternative investments and things, those are going to help rescue you from the crisis that you're in. So back to the scenario of outdoor wilderness survival. Let's talk about three factors. Three factors that come into play to increase your chances of rescue should you, unfortunately, God forbid, find yourself in an event like that, where you're outdoors and let's say that hunting trip or hiking trip has gone awry and something happens. The first factor, physiological and psychological factors. Let's talk a little bit about that. There's kind of two parts to that, but I'm going to lump it into one category. These are factors that directly affect the survivability of the individual who's in the situation. And unfortunately, if you don't learn to master these, they're going to hinder your chances of survival greatly. And the first one, again, this is all part number one, analyzing the physiological and the psychological factors after there's an accident. First of all, pain. Okay, you're going to experience some pain, most likely, physical pain. And the pain that you experience as a result of any injuries that you might suffer during that event can weaken your will to survive. That's the problem. And it also, obviously, I probably don't have to say this, but I'm going to anyway, it weakens your physical ability to counter the effects that have gone on. And pain medication is very essential. You know, we've talked about bug out bags and travel bags. Make sure that you've got pain medication packed in your emergency bags. And also, if you're going on a hunting trip, going on a hiking trip, make sure in your bag you've got pain medications. Several types. I'm talking about over-the-counter pain meds right now. Over-the-counter pain meds are cheap. They're easy to obtain. I would suggest have one of each type. For example, a bottle of Tylenol, a bottle of ibuprofen. You know, Tylenol is acetaminophen. Have some ibuprofen, and also have some naproxen sodium. Have some Aleve, Naprosyn it's also called. The reason being is because everybody's body is different. Everybody's body chemistry is different. And some people react differently to the different types of over-the-counter pain medications. They're cheap. They're only a couple bucks each for some small bottles. You know, I mean, you know, you don't know how your body's going to react, and the people who are with you, you know, they might react well to one, and the other one's not going to help. So make sure you've got that. Those are cheap. It's inexcusable not to have that in your bag as a preparation. All right, now let's talk a little bit about narcotic pain meds. You know, this is kind of a personal choice. I'm kind of taking a risk talking about this. You know, you decide whether you want to keep narcotic pain meds in your emergency bag or not. I do. I keep a very small amount. They're medicines that have been prescribed to me. All right, I'm not doing anything illegal. These are prescriptions. These are old prescriptions that I had left over from a surgery that I recently had, but it's, you know, it's a pretty good idea to keep some of those in because they can relieve pain quickly. That pain is going to psychologically hinder you from a lot. So again, you might want to have both. You might want to have over-the-counter. You might want to have narcotic. Take your pick, or have a little bit of both. Okay. Now let me talk about another physiological factor, and that's the cold and the heat, the environmental conditions that are going to exist. at the site of that emergency, they could be in the extreme range. I mean, you could have extreme cold conditions, like I'm in Wisconsin right now, blizzard conditions, and this impending blizzard that's going to hit here is what kind of got me thinking about this and got me motivated to do this show. The problem is that a large part of your body's metabolic effort is going to be expended encountering the extreme temperatures. Therefore, threatens your survival. And even just a little bit of relief from the cold, for example, just a tiny bit, even if it's something like a blanket, that can make a huge difference. And if it's a hiking trip or a hunting trip that's gone wrong, even just a simple small ability to be able to make a fire, all right, that, as we all know, makes a huge difference. Let me recommend blast matches. You know, there's a lot of different fire starters that people talk about. You know, magnesium fire starters and different ways to keep fire-making equipment. A blast match is an excellent tool. I'll put a link in today's show notes. It's an awesome, very durable, very almost a foolproof fire starter. You got to be able to use it correctly, but there's a good YouTube video on blast matches, and I don't want to burn up a whole lot of today's show time on talking about those, so check out the link that I post in the show notes on that. But remember to prepare for the cold and the heat, and know in advance what you're going to do if you run into to an extreme cold or extreme heat temperature. All right, the next physiological factor, thirst. Water loss obviously leads to thirst, and it's one of the most devastating situations that anybody in a disaster can go through, and that is thirst and water loss, and it can reduce your mental ability to concentrate on the task of survival. And the problem with water deprivation is that the toll that it takes on you mentally can force you to make a lot of bad decisions. Now, some people are wondering, well, you know, how much water should I carry in my bug out bag? How much should I have in my emergency bag? If I'm going on a hiking or hunting trip, should I carry water? How much water should I carry? I think the question of how much water you should carry is not as important as do you have the ability to obtain and filter and purify water. Water purification filters, water filtration tablets. A lot of people on our forum have been posting information lately. A couple of forum members have actually tested out some water filters. Check out posts by CX and Knives and Gear on our forum. Excellent water filtration devices that they've tested out. I think that's more important, that and the ability to purify it, because the chances are probably pretty good, unless you're out in the barren desert somewhere, of you finding water pretty good, but you have to have a way to be able to purify it and drink it. So space is going to be limited, weight is going to be limited, concentrate more on the procurement of water and the filtration of it. Okay, another physiological factor. This is what I worry about a lot. Hunger. You know, water, of course, water, you know, thirst is bad. You can survive longer without something to eat than you can without the ability to get water. But let's talk a little bit about hunger, because hunger reduces your mental ability for rational thinking as well, just like thirst does. And hunger reduces also, hunger and thirst both causes a reduction in your tolerance level for the stresses that you're going to run into, such as the cold and the heat and the pain that we mentioned before. And fear. Fear is going to set in. You know, I don't think we're being honest with ourselves if we say we're not going to be afraid if a situation like this happens to us. If all of a sudden, you know, that hunting trip's gone wrong, or you find yourself stuck in a blizzard and you're outside, your car breaks down, or whatever. Sure, you're going to be in fear. And that's a stressor. And hunger and thirst is going to inhibit your ability to respond to that stress. So keep small amounts of food. I like Millennium snack bars. I like any kind of good, healthy snack bar, high calorie, low weight type of snack bars that are easy to carry. Just something to keep some of the hunger down. You know, you don't have to carry tons and tons of food, but carry a little bit. Also, let's talk about fatigue, another physiological factor. Sleep. Obviously, if you know you're going to go on an excursion, if you know you're going to go on an outdoor journey, get plenty of rest before you go. And, you know, I've been with a lot of people before on outdoor excursions, and people are partying like crazy, you know, for a couple of nights sometimes. It reminds me of deer hunting when I was growing up as a young adult in Wisconsin. You know, a lot of folks were using deer hunting as a chance to, as an excuse to go out and party, right? Come on, deer hunters. Tell me, don't make sure you're honest with me. Sure, you use deer hunting as a chance to party, right? You realize that that's probably the cause of the biggest cause of the severity of a lot of deer hunting accidents is that people are fatigued. And also, they're dehydrated because they've been partying so much, and they're fatigued, and they haven't gotten much sleep, and so their decision-making is impaired. And if an accident happens, that fatigue is going to set in, and it's going to be a lot tougher for them to survive and wait for rescue to get there. So get plenty of rest beforehand, because it's probably going to be a little bit tough to get rest while you're on your outdoor excursion. Okay? Now, I want to now get into a psychological factor, and that is boredom and loneliness. Let's talk about a single survivor situation. This is where the boredom factor sets in. And once that person has gone through the initial actions of survival and carries them out, and they feel like they're no longer in immediate danger, but it might be apparent that help is not coming anytime soon, the boredom and the loneliness factor sets in. So whatever you can carry, whatever that's lightweight, take something with you to keep yourself entertained, books, cards, small battery-powered electrical devices, CD players, iPods, whatever. Whatever you can do to stay entertained, it's critical. Keep that mind healthy. Had to take care of my need for thirst there, folks. I had to grab a little drink of water. The other psychological element to this, of course, is fear. I alluded to this a little bit earlier. Fear is the worst enemy of survival. Reason being is it sets in psychological barriers that inhibit the assessment of the threat. It weakens your ability to assess what's really going on. And then fear starts to lead to panic. And at the panic time, that's when the survivor starts to perceive that the threat is magnified. And here's the problem, is you start to think that the threat is really bigger than it is, and then therefore you start making those bad decisions again. Now, a little bit of fear is okay. A little bit of fear is natural. But excess fear is very detrimental to the chances of survival. You have to accept fear and realize that it's a natural reaction to the threatening situation that you're in, and that you're likely to be okay if you make good decisions and if you use your preps, your preparations that you've made in advance. Without taking a whole lot of time and burning up too much of the show, the one thing I want to say about fear is learn to control your breathing. That's important. And I've done some other shows. If you go back, and I think one of my shows that I did is entitled Managing Fear During an Emergency. I want to say that's episode number 8. Go to the main website and check it out. But I talk extensively in there about how to manage fear. But your breathing is very critical. Learn to control that. Read up on that ahead of time. And listen to that show that I did and get on the internet and do some searching on that as well. Good subject to know how to reduce that fear. And that kind of plays into the next factor that I want to talk about. So I just briefly covered the physiological and the psychological factors that hit you. Now let's talk about attitudinal factors. You might say, well, Bob, aren't those the same as psychological? Not quite. A few differences. The most important attitude required during a survival situation is the ability of the survivor to immediately accept reality. And you have to accept the reality of the new situation that you're in. And also, you have to be able to adapt to the new situation and react appropriately. And this, in my humble opinion, is where training comes into play. Training in advance, going through drills and taking courses and knowing what to do in different types of emergencies. The training that you take in advance has the potential to develop the reactions and to develop your reactions in stressful situations. And what it does is it gives you a couple things. First of all, it helps you create the attribute of courage, first of all, and perseverance. I've mentioned before, knowledge is power. And that extra power is going to give you the courage to persevere in that bad situation. It also gives you the intelligence and the personality. And those play a role in the formation of the reaction that you're going to have towards that stressful scenario that you're in. And the will to survive is the single most important psychological attribute and also the single most important attitude factor necessary to ensure that you get rescued. There's countless stories of people surviving just because they had the will to, just because they didn't quit, and they had that no-quit attitude. And the forces out there that are enemies of survival tend to attack our attitudes. And then that reduces our will to survive, and then therefore it reduces our chance of rescue. And folks, that's one of the biggest reasons why you hear me talk so much about attitude and psychological issues on my shows. I'm not going to say that it's the only thing that you need to survive, because obviously you have to have skills, you have to have gear. But that attitude and that will, if it's not there, all the gear in the world isn't going to help you. And the next factor is basically, that's number three I want to cover, it's your actual survival activities. And what I mean by your survival activities is what you actually start to do after you've developed the right attitude, the patterns of the activities that you carry out in the event of a wilderness survival situation are going to be determined by a few things. First of all, it's going to be determined by the urgency of the need. And here's what I mean by that statement. Certain activities need to be started early in your survival situation to make sure that, first of all, you're safe and to ensure that the rest of the activities that you're about to take can be done safely. In any survival situation, the survivor has to prioritize. You have to set an agenda for your actions, basically, in order of the need, and then you have to execute them. Let me give you an example, since we're talking about wilderness survival. All right, let's take a look at some historical data that have been gathered by countless investigators after a wilderness accident occurs. And pretty much, these are the activities pretty close to the order that they typically take place. First of all, first aid. All right, you're going to have to assess injuries to yourself and injuries to other parties, and you're going to have to render first aid. You're going to have to take care of that first, because without that, if people are bleeding, you're not going to be able to do too much after that if you don't stop the bleeding. Okay, you could be dead. So first aid is top of the list. Then signaling for rescue. If it's the wilderness, I hope that you've planned something in advance. I hope you've taken some kind of flares or something with you that can help generate some signals for rescue. Somebody, one of my friends brought up Morse code recently. I'm going to throw a question out to the audience. What do you think of Morse code? You think it's important to know Morse code or not? Is that a lost art, or is that still something valid out there? I'd like to hear from all of you. Throw a comment on the forum or throw a comment on the blog, but it's something that I thought about when I was putting together the show notes. Anything that you can do and that you can take with you to signal for help, vitally important. Then the next step is shelter making. That's the next part of your activities. You've got to stay hidden or stay protected from the elements, knowing how to make a shelter. I've mentioned this before. Even having one of those super large contractor size black plastic garbage bags. Those things are easy to carry. Carry a couple of them. You can make a shelter with that. You know, some sticks and a couple of those big contractor-sized garbage bags, and you'd be amazed what you can do with that. There's some good YouTube videos on that. Check that out, too. The next activity would be taking actions against the elements, the heat, and the cold, like making a fire or figuring out, if you're in extreme heat, how to get to a cool, shaded place. After that, of course, water procurement, like I talked about a little bit earlier in the show, and having a way to purify it. And then food procurement. This is where firearms comes into play. Having a way to hunt down and kill food, or even fishing gear. Let's not forget keeping portable, carrying along portable fishing poles. Folks, you may not enjoy fishing. I love fishing. Even if fishing is not something that's fun for you, at least learn some of the basics of it. All right, learn some of the basics, how to put, you know, what kind of bait to carry, how to put bait on the hook. If you're not using live bait, how to work a basic artificial bait. All right, those types of things, very critical, especially for wilderness survival. I don't know how you can ignore food procurement or getting food, especially hunting and fishing skills. And, of course, last but not least, the next activity is basically waiting it out. Waiting it out and keeping yourself alive and keeping yourself as well as possible until help arrives. Okay, so now, having covered some of the factors that come into play in terms of your ability to secure rescue, I talked about the physiological and the psychological factors, and then I covered a little bit on the attitude and then the survival activities. Now let's talk about some things in advance, especially if you're going to go on an outdoor excursion, things that you can do ahead of time to try to prevent disasters or, as I said, mitigate their impacts. First of all, do you know the terrain? Do you have a good knowledge of the planned hike or the planned excursion or the planned hunting trip? Have you looked at maps? Have you studied topographical maps before you left? Have you got on the internet and have you looked at all the different challenges and the terrain that you're about to encounter? Do you have the necessary equipment available? Do you have at least, you know, enough equipment to get you through 24 to 48 hours? Have you devised a way to carry that and to carry that efficiently? Another question to ask is, are you in good physical condition? You'd be amazed how many people are foolish and they take on activities that they're just not physically capable of doing. And this is why I like to talk about fitness a lot, because staying fit prevents a lot of the negative impact. So, do you have the physical condition, and know in advance, and be honest with yourself, folks, and know in advance what types of physical scenarios that you're going to try to do, and if you don't think you can do it, if you don't think you can handle it, don't be a macho man and don't try it, all right? You're still going to have fun on the excursion, and you certainly won't have much fun if you try something you're physically not capable of doing and an accident happens. Fatigue is probably the greatest cause of accidents in outdoor activities. Do you have the training? Is this your first time? Are you winging it, or have you gone some seminars? Gone to some seminars and training classes. One of our forum members put a post about some. One of our forum members from Georgia put a post on the forum about some classes that he was going to take in outdoor and wilderness survival. Probably in plans before, in plans that he's making before taking an outdoor excursion. And I'm glad to see that. I'm glad to see him taking some courses in advance. And even if you need some refresher courses, it's critical. You might be an experienced wilderness survival expert. You might be an experienced outdoorsman, but it doesn't hurt to be refreshed and go back to the basics once in a while. Again, let me reemphasize water procurement and filtration. I have a problem with that procurement word. The pronunciation of that word is tough for me today. I'm not sure why. Sorry about that. Have you packed the proper clothing? Know what kind of clothes that people typically take, especially if it's your first time on this type of a journey. The other thing I want to talk about is, did you drink enough water before you left? All right, think about that. Have you consumed enough water? Are you hydrated before you go on the journey? That's huge. And have you prepared those maps as I talked about earlier, and do you have your emergency signal procedures in place? Have you done a pre-check of all your gear? Have you checked out everything? Does everything work the way it's supposed to? Have you done a pre-check of all your food supplies? Are you forgetting anything? And have you run some emergency drills? Have you gone through some dry runs of what you're going to do if an emergency does happen? All right, so those are some things to think about before you head out into the wilderness. And let's talk about a few things. If you do, unfortunately, end up in a disaster situation, a couple other things I want to share with you. Relax. Taking a deep breath, relaxing, examining your surroundings, doing things like looking for landmarks, looking for identification points to give to search and rescue teams, these are critical. And what's also critical is if you're in a group, here's something else that I've learned. If you're in a group and a disaster happens, practice what's called duty allocation. In other words, delegation. Assigning people different duties and what they're supposed to do to help the survival situation. You need to choose a leader, and then the leader of that group needs to delegate responsibility. It's called resource management. More people pitching in with their assigned duties and being able to focus on what their task is at hand, you can go a heck of a lot farther that way. So remember that if you're in a group. And some general points that I want to finish up with. Don't panic. And don't go wildly about the tasks that you have at hand. Plan your actions in advance and then coolly and calmly execute them. Next, do a rational and realistic threat analysis. Keep your courage up. Know that help is on the way. It's important to keep that attitude going and make full use of the survival pack items that you've carefully planned in advance. Those things are designed to help you make full use of them. Some people pose the question, well, you know, do I need to conserve my survival pack items? To an extent, yes. But don't conserve them so much that you're not making full use of them and not keeping yourself as comfortable as possible. See, the more comfortable you can be, the more positive that your attitude is going to be. And really, you're probably going to be able to assist search and rescue teams if you have a better attitude and you're better prepared. And in conclusion, I want to say this. The will to survive is the single most important psychological attribute to ensure your rescue. And the attributes of courage, perseverance, intelligence, and your personality also play a huge, important role in your survival and your rescue. And with that being said, I wish you safety in whatever outdoor excursions that you decide to undertake. I hope nothing happens to you, but I hope that this half an hour that we've spent together talking a little bit about some of the preparations we can take and some of the things that can happen, I hope that this has given you some things to think about before you take that next hiking trip, before you go fishing, before you go hunting, before you go sightseeing, whatever you're doing, or before you decide to head up to the North Country and possibly get stuck in a blizzard like I am. Okay? I hope that it's helped you, and I hope I've given you some things to think about. So thank you for listening to episode 47. Of today's survival show. My name is Bob Main. My goal is to help you harness the power of choice to live the life the way you want to live it on your own terms and to strengthen your resolve in case an accident happens in the wilderness. Our goal is to make survival simple, not extreme. Do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.